Welcome to the New Earth Architectress, where you'll discover how the evolution in consciousness is paving the way for your leading role in architecture. If you're a high-achieving, spirit-conscious woman architect who's hearing the deep call to bridge spirit with form, welcome. Now is the time, and we are the ones.
Hello, you beautiful creators, builders, architects, designers, land stewards, visionary leaders of the new earth. Welcome to the Sacred Blueprint for Our New Earth interview series. My name is Aisha Rose Melody Hassan, and I am your host for this series. I am an architect, alchemical healer, and the creator of the Sacred Blueprint. This is a cutting-edge vessel of courses and programs for women architects and designers, as well as property owners, land stewards, on helping them to create, to birth dream sanctuaries through a new modality that bridges spirit with architecture. This series is a response to a call I've been receiving on very high volume from Mother Earth and the nature spirits. They kicked me in the butt to quit my job in conventional practice, which was depleting me, leading to chronic illness and stress. And they encouraged me to quit and pave a new way that is aligned with the spirit of the land and aligned with my soul as well as my clients' souls. So this series is gathering together an incredible circle of energetic design experts who will be sharing their knowledge, their expertise, their unique modalities, and how they work with nature's energies to create healing sanctuaries. And so you're going to be receiving a lot of tips and tools, practical and spiritual, that you can apply to your homes, the design of your homes, communities, gardens, even master plans for the city. So I'm so excited to be hosting this series, and make sure that you watch all the interviews. We have them up until the end of the month. Typically, we had them up for a very limited time, and this season we are expanding the time to a couple weeks. So we're really excited about giving you this free resource. Today, I am interviewing a dear colleague of mine based in New York. She is a feng shui practitioner, an educator, as well as an architect. And she is teaching her students on how to weave mindfulness and the essential principles of feng shui into designing interiors, into designing spaces that create peace, harmony, grounding, abundance, joy, and so much more. She is also the co-founder of the Mindful Design Feng Shui School, and she is also the author of several books, one of which we will be talking about today, that she just recently released with her business partner. I'm delighted to invite Angie Cho to the conversation. Welcome, Angie. Yay,
hi,
welcome.
Aisha.
So great Hello. To see you again, all the so way from New York.
Yeah, so good to see you too.
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited for another conversation to learn more about the art of feng shui. I never studied feng shui myself, but I find that as I learn more and more, there's a lot of bridges and similarities, aligning points with the modality that I was guided to birth, the Sacred Blueprint for, women architects and designers, as well as property owners on how they can birth their dream sanctuaries. The elements are part of the system and cycles of life. And I am, excited to hear more about what you're up to and this new book that I've been studying and I have in my hands right now, and I'm excited to hear more about it. Before we dive into the book and projects that you're up to, I'd love for the audience to hear about your background. How did you start the Mindful Design Feng Shui School? How did you get into Feng Shui? You're an architect. What led you on this path?
Well, that's a great question. So I think it sounds similar to what you described, where we were both working in architecture and in design, and there were definitely parts of it that weren't fulfilling, and that there was a lot of burnout and unhappiness in that kind of world. So, you know, yeah, I am a licensed architect and I still do architecture work in New York, just a couple projects a year. And just with, I try to cherry pick the best clients that are really aligned. And I started the Feng Shui School after having practiced Feng Shui as a consultant for many years. And I met with my business partner, Laura Morris, who I wrote Mindful Living with. We studied in the same Feng Shui school together, but we were different years. And you know when you're with people, there's sometimes there's a good alignment, and you also find people that you admire. So I think that Laura was one of the people in my course that I saw stood out, and I think she saw the same with me. So actually, one of our teachers, our mentors, asked us to teach a class together for their program, the program that we graduated from. So we actually talk about this in our book, Mindful Living, but we were invited to teach a class, and we went up to a retreat center with our former teachers. And we were teaching this class together, and it was like the first time we actually spent some time together. And we had a little break, and there was a labyrinth on the land. And so we were walking this labyrinth, and we ended up just talking about our, you know, what we wanted to do in the future. And we ended up birthing this idea of teaching a feng shui school together. And at the same time, our teachers then told us that their school was dissolving because, you know, they're like 30 years old. They're 30 years senior to us. And so it's that good generational balance to start to, you know, it was time for them to kind of let go of what they were doing, and time for us to kind of move into more teaching, because we were, Laura and I were really longing to work with people on a deeper level too, because when you work with someone in, as a feng shui consultant, often it's a very short relationship, like just a one-off consultation. And we really benefited from the deep practice of feng shui as a lifestyle. And so we really wanted to be able to give all the teachings and give it in depth. And I think also this is a lot of the world is kind of, in some ways turning this way. They're getting more like light on everything, right? Like wanting little snippets and just wanting to learn everything superficially. But at the same time, I think there's the flip side to that, that people are really longing to go deeper. So Anyway, that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to find those people that wanted to long to go deeper into the practice, and maybe make it part of their profession or integrate it into their design work. Because, you know, we get a lot of interior designers, especially, and interior design professionals in our school. So we really wanted to just go deeper and be able to kind of teach people. So that's what we ended up creating.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I'm so glad that you did. And in your school, do you have any in-person teachings, or is it predominantly online? Like, are you teaching, is it across America or is it across the world? I'm curious, like, the scope.
So we have a global community. The majority of our students are American, and then we have a couple of Canadians and then a couple of Europeans generally. And we have a very, very small cohort. So next year, we won't be accepting more than 27 students.
Okay, but that's still a fair size, you know, group to be,
working with. So, and it's completely online. So we were completely online even before 2020. So it was quite an easy transition for us
Right. Like, we
at
got
that
this
time.
covered.
Right. It was very easy for us because also my business partner is in Canada and also in Italy half the year, and I'm in New York City. So we really wanted to incorporate, have everyone be available. But when Laura and I studied together, she would fly into New York 4 times a year.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. So you're saying then you have cohorts. So is it like a few cohorts a year, or like is it seasonally, or is
No,
it
we just teach one cohort a year.
a one cohort a year? Yeah.
Yeah,
Because,
one cohort.
right, I heard the word deep. It's for the students who want to go deep and get this full
Well, it's yeah,
course.
so we have one cohort a year that starts in February and ends around July. And then we actually now have an advanced training program. So one of our mentors, Catherine Metz, who, again, like there she's looking to retire eventually, and she would like to pass on her legacy. So we've created an advanced training program for those who really want to take the scholarly approach to feng shui and really like dive super deep into the esoteric things. Because what we teach in the practitioner training program is exactly what you need to know to become a feng shui consultant, to feel confident to give a feng shui consultation at the end of the 6 months. And every single student says yes. I mean, as long as they finish the curriculum, they've said yes. They feel confident to do a feng shui consultation. And they're
That's the
giving all,
critical.
right. Well, that's what we're offering. We're offering a practitioner's training program. But then, once you go into that, there's a whole bunch of other teachings that you may never give to a client. Right. So there's a whole bunch of other teachings that you can dive into from a feng shui perspective, that really dive into feng shui. And it, because the feng shui that I teach and practice is called BTB. And there's a lot of magic in it. There's a lot of magic and esoteric teachings and meditations and visualization and spells. And all of that is like stuff that you don't really give someone that you're meeting just for 2 hours, because when you meet someone for two
That's a
hours,
lot
you
of,
you just
a
give
lot of
them
information.
like what they need. You move this here, maybe this color here, you maybe do this one transcendental adjustment, but there's a whole body of teachings that you, again, you may never ever use, but there it's there. So for those scholars, we have an advanced training program that's 4 years long, that with more teachings than you could ever like read, but that we offer that in the fall too. So now we're kind of expanding
Oh,
our
that's
curriculum.
beautiful. I'm glad that you're doing that, because I feel like there's a lot of well, the women and architects and designers that I'm mentoring, they do want to go deep, and they often come to me of like had meditation training. You know, it could be yoga, it could be esoteric, studies. Oh God, there's so much that they come with. And what I find is that depth of knowledge, I help them to be able to use that knowledge to be able to develop their own modality. And actually, kind of even more importantly, Angie, it's like how to conduct your life. How to be in good and right relations with other people, with clients, with yourself. And it's like it's deep. You have the deep esoteric work studies. Of course, it's not for everyone, but we're on this process of awakening, of upgrading, right? Humanity is, we're in this process of individuation and discovering, like, oh, I'm different than the tribe. I'm different than what society is telling me I should be. And I have some gems and seeds and keys within me that want to emerge. And so I find that the esoteric training, going deeper in whatever body of, sacred healing arts or spiritual arts, can really help. Like, it's helping me to run my business, to have a meditation practice, to have be studying certain laws of the cosmos, laws of nature, to be a better person and a better leader at the end of the day, and also prepare for death, which is something that we don't talk about in the West. I was born and raised in Canada. And, you know, this has been coming up a lot. My father passed away this year, and, you know, really noticing that we don't honor death like, I mean, I'm a Turkish Canadian, so I'm thinking more about the East, that there's, it's still woven into the culture here in Turkey, more of an acknowledgement and honoring. There's ceremony that occurs. Wow, there's lots streaming through right now, Angie, just after you sharing, you know, that you go deep. So I don't want to take the train off a completely different
track. Oh, no, it's okay.
Here.
It's, but yeah, no, it's so
I love the deep. I love the deep, because I think it's important for us to start to notice not only ourselves in a deeper way, but also it's a pathway for noticing our surroundings in a deeper way. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's why the people who follow us, right, that follow you and I, like, are typically people who, especially a lot of women, who really long to go a little bit deeper. It may just start with, like, they're interested in design in their homes, and then they also recognize there's a level of intuition and there's some kind of longing there, right, beyond the superficial. So what that does is eventually it does unpack, like, a lot of things. And what it ultimately comes down to is, how do we appreciate our human life on this planet that we've inherited, right? So how do we, and I think architects and designers and feng shui consultants do this, is like, how do we connect and have heaven and earth? How do we bring together the invisible with the visible, the earth realm? Like, it has to stand on, like, what you and I do is it has to actually stand on the earth, right? It has to function in this earth realm on the practical side. It has to function. You have to live in it. It can't fall down and kill you. Needs to meet building codes. But then also there's this spirit side that is really important too. And so the people that come to us are really longing to make those connections and can see, like, oh, it's more than just a home. Home means so much more, right?
Yeah. Yeah. More than just, you know, a pretty countertop, more than just something that you can photograph in a magazine, or some people don't care about that, but, like, it could just be, like, more than just shelter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that there's that spirit element. And for me, that's the feminine, Angie. That's the feminine. That's the divine feminine aspect. Now, of course, like the yin and the yang, which you're an expert in, I'm sure, there's always the masculine within the spirit as well. And then there's always the feminine within the form and the structure, right? And the boundaries, of course. So it's never, like, fully black and white, but, you know, the feminine has been ignored for so long in architecture, Angie, you know, like, oh.
Well, I mean, it's a very male dominated field, right?
Oh. Like,
I know. I remember my first job. They're like, make sure you wear your lipstick when you go to the building department.
Really?
Yeah.
You got a comment like that. And was this from a male?
Well, of course.
Well, it could be a female who's, like, not really in touch with her feminine. I don't know.
No, it was
lipstick. So basically that the building department guys will be like, oh, you're cute and, like, attractive or something, and you'll get that, like, the permit passed.
I guess so. Yeah, but it's definitely a very male dominated field, right?
It is. It's changing, though. It's changing. Mm-hmm. And I'm committed to help open and pave the way. I want to gather together all of us, and we rewrite the building code to bring more spirit and life in the building code. Wouldn't that be great? Like, that there's a code of conduct on how to communicate with the land. There's a code of conduct on how you communicate with houses. You know, there's a respect, there's an honoring. How awesome would that be, Angie?
Well, I, you know, thinking about building codes gives me PTSD now. So you can do that, but I'll go along with it because I'm like, oh, building, I don't want to think about building codes.
And I back in the day, I was the one, like, I had to carry my building codes. Like, everyone's looking at them digitally, right? Like, it's like, oh, these binders that you carry.
No, well, I had the binders. I worked at an office. I didn't own the binders myself.
So we need,
I think I did buy one. I think when I started, there still was binders, though, on my own. So I did have a set, but they've long been recycled. But we still acknowledge, especially like for like this audience, probably like there, we acknowledge there's an importance. You can't forget the practical. You can't forget that we're here on this earth. Yeah. You have to touch, you have to use your feet and your head, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We wouldn't be able to build our homes, our buildings, our gardens, anything without the practical. So yeah, I love this balance.
Hey, this is Aisha popping in here to let you know about my free webinar. This is where you're going to discover how to unlock your spirit architect mastery, and it's going to support you to magnetize amazing clients who love paying you top dollar for your intuitive gifts. You're going to magnetize soul liberating health and overflowing creativity, birthing the sanctuaries of our new earth. I also offer an exclusive resource that I don't share publicly. This is the Sacred Blueprint Sweet Spot Profit Map. This is where you're going to gain tools that are going to support you to ditch the depletion of conventional practice in order to build a prospering architecture practice, bridging spirit with form. So make sure you sign up below for your free access, and on with the interview.
Angie, I want to read an intro from your beautiful book, everyone, Mindful Living, A Guide to the Everyday Magic of Feng Shui. This is Angie's and Laura's latest book. We will have the link. The link is below the video, so make sure that you check it out. I want to read this intro, and out of that, let's have a conversation about, yeah, what is feng shui for you, Angie, and how you weave feng shui into your design practice and your teaching practice. Mindfulness and everyday magic. Feng shui is a kind of everyday magic, and anyone can do it. You don't need special abilities. The magic of feng shui is not about having psychic abilities or superpowers. It's about being in harmony with the world and your surroundings, as well as your connection to self and others. Feng shui offers practices to cultivate your life force energy, known as qi, so you can become more aware and sensitive to the world around you. It also offers guidance to attune you with the energy of the earth, nature, and seasonal cycles. Feng shui has frameworks, systems, symbolism, and language that allow all of us to divine and interpret this unseen energy. Like the everyday magic of many cultures, feng shui is grounded, practical, and simple. It is a life view that connects heaven and earth, the esoteric and the mundane, with humans standing in the middle. With it, you can understand your home, nature, and the tangible world, tapping into something even bigger. These practices offer opportunities to awaken, create awareness, and highlight stuck patterns and perceived limitations. Feng shui allows us to hear what the universe is saying if we can open up and listen. That's a beautiful introduction. Beautiful introduction. Yeah. Tell us more.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think one thing that's really important in that excerpt is the fact that feng shui, or, you know, what you teach, and any kind of esoteric practice is available to everyone. And I don't want people to think that you need to be born with special abilities. And we all have this inherent connection with our world and connection to intuition that maybe because of our conditioning, we've covered it up. So I'm Buddhist, and in Buddhist like metaphor or Buddhist teachings, they'll often talk about like the sun is always there, even though there's clouds covering it, right? So it doesn't mean the sun's not there anymore. And so there's this also this basic goodness within each of us. There's this intuition, there's a connection in that, and to the world and to each other that we can really always tap into. And so it really makes me sad when sometimes people just say things like, oh, I'm not creative or I'm not intuitive. And they think that you need to be born with these special powers. And it also makes me sad too when people try to elevate themselves on a pedestal saying like, I'm so much better than you because I have these special powers. And really, like, we all have them. And I think that each person listening to this and our followers should absolutely understand that like this is part of your what you've been born with, like what we're all born with this ability, and how we offer it to the world is unique to each of us, right? So I want everyone to honor that, and it's your heritage, right?
Yeah, like birthright,
Mm-hmm.
heritage. We all come to this world with these gifts. It's just, they show up in different ways, right?
Yeah, and I think that's quite important for people to recognize. And then if we want to take it to a practical level, which is like practical slash still a little, still esoteric, is one thing that you and I were talking about earlier is one of the concepts that we use in feng shui is called the Bagua, and it's a mandala. And for the listeners, if they want to find a prac like how do they actually begin to practice feng shui and see how it may apply to their lives, Aisha and I wanted to share the Bagua with all of you. So I can share my screen, like, and let's see. So here's an excerpt from the book, and there's a section, I guess it's page 48 and 49, where you can read about the Bagua, and we go into in the further pages in this chapter, go through each of these areas more in depth. But it's really a mandala. So in the past, people have called or described the Bagua as a grid. It can be a grid. It can also be an octagon. It can also be circles. It also could be pie shape. But so, and I think most everyone here who's a designer, you understand like. It's a diagram, right? So a diagram like show like so we'll draw a diagram of a toilet doesn't mean that the toilet has to look like that, right? So but this is like it's a diagram, the mandala. And I like to use the word mandala instead of map or grid because I feel like mandala is more embraced now and people are starting to understand it at least. But it means more. So mandala often, because I've drawn lots of mandalas in my life, like you and I probably love drafting. So it's like the spiritual drafter's dream to draw mandalas. So, but you often
Like
start with the
so
center.
calming.
I know. Like I would take these classes where you like draw it all with arcs, and you don't measure anything. It's just all like divided. It's all geometry. It's so fun. And I also study like Arabic. Or like sacred geometry, that stuff. But
Oh,
that's another
beautiful.
conversation. But so mandala has a center, right? And the center is this area here that we call the Tai Chi, or we've given the label harmony, and it's the center of the Bagua, and then it expands out and to this these eight guas, and gua means image or direction. And so it's you can also think of it as a center, and then these areas radiate out, and
Out.
they radiate out, but they also come in too. So it's both ways. So
Inhale and exhale, right?
exactly. And they have different like nuances. Like you see these symbols; these are I Ching symbols, which is the Taoist book of changes, the Taoist book of divination. So they have an I Ching relationship. They have color relationships, elemental relationships, shapes, seasons, and so on, like zodiac animals. So there's a lot to go on there, but to get more practical, you could actually overlay this mandala on your bedroom. So and everyone here can do this. And I like to start with the bedroom because generally most people have a rectangular shaped bedroom or a simple shaped bedroom, whereas their home may be more complicated.
Yep.
And so you can lay, so here's a simplified version of the mandala. You always align the bottom with the entry wall of your space. So here's, you know, I know the folks here don't need three different diagrams, but most of the world needs three different diagrams.
The architects are already drawing the section in their heads right
I
now.
I know. So, but you know, the door would fall somewhere along the, you know, the entry wall, this space, and you align the bottom of the bagua along with it. So basically you stay, the way I describe it when I don't have a visual is I say, stand in the door of your bedroom, looking in, and divide the room into a 3x3 grid, like a tic-tac-toe. And so the two most popular areas are abundance and nurture. So the far left area, so if you're standing in the door looking in, the far left corner is abundance or wealth, and the far right corner is nourishment, nurture, it's romantic relationships and partnerships. So and you can see on this diagram, the bagua, the nurture area is related to the color pink, and the abundance area is related to the color purple.
Yeah.
So you could always start simply with your bedroom, because your bedroom is also important because it is your personal space. So it's either you and your partner, sometimes you and a child, maybe. Generally, it's like it's the one space in your home that's just for you if you live with other people, right?
Yeah.
And it's the space that you spend the most time in, right? You sleep in that room, and it's the space that you spend the most yin time in, meaning when you're in a non-conscious sleep state. So it actually has the most effect on you from a feng shui perspective, and it represents you. So that's why it's also a powerful way to start. And I think, like, sometimes in the Western world, we think more is more, and you think, well, I don't just want to do the bedroom, but really, like, the bedroom is the best place to start. It's simple. It gets right to the point, and it works on your personal chi, your personal energy. And it's more direct. And it also, because you're in that room sleeping and in that yin's passive yin receptive state, you're more susceptible to the shifts that you make in that room. So it's quite powerful. So for instance, you know, someone who's watching could decide, like, okay, well, I really want to work on inviting more abundance into my life. And then you may want to begin to look at what's going on in that area of your bedroom.
Right.
Or if you want to support your existing partnership or invite a new partnership, you may want to look at the nurture area of your bedroom and see what's going on. And then in the book, we talk further about, like, you can make adjustments, like you want to be very literal and very straightforward. You could put something purple in the abundance area if you want to be more additive and, like, add something that will enhance it, like a piece of amethyst, which also has its own meaning of abundance, right?
Yeah.
Or you could say you want to invite a partnership, you could place rose quartz or a pair of rose quartz in the nurture area of your bedroom if you want to invite a partnership. So you can use it additive, like you add the color, you could add something that enhances that area, or you can look at it with curiosity and see what's happening. Like, so many people tell me, oh, I have a chair in my relationship area, and that's where I put all my laundry.
Right, like dirty underwear and socks or something.
Yeah, right. So it's just like, so there's different ways that you can work with this. You could unpack, you can have curiosity,
right.
You can clean,
like,
up
how
that
am
area.
I using it right now? Yeah, I'm thinking about our bedroom right now too, so which has a similar orientation to the one on the bottom. So
which one? The insight or the wisdom? Oh, wisdom. Okay, so this one.
Yeah, that one.
So
The door in wisdom, kind of like doors kind of touching alignment, like it's in wisdom and alignment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, you could just take a look at what's happening. That's like one of the kind of the simplest ways to look at the Bagua, like see if there's something you want to enhance and add something to it that
Yeah.
with intention that you want to improve that area. Or you can also pay attention to what's already happening in that area.
I think that will be
notice.
A really good lesson, right? A mirror to see like, okay, well, what's already happening? Before you get into some other practical, advice pulling from this book, just to take a couple steps back about the Baguas. I know it's very deep and I know it's based on these I Ching symbols and stuff, but like in a nutshell, can you explain and share why is it that the abundance corner is the left top, you know, on that configuration relative to, I guess you say, was it the like the entrance, the mouth, or the doorway?
Mm-hmm.
Well, why is it in that whole configuration? Like, why isn't growth in the upper right hand corner?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there are different Baguas. There's a pre-heaven Bagua, and this is called the post-heaven Bagua. And we don't get into the book because it's not beginner level, but the pre-heaven Bagua is what you might see on those Bagua mirrors. If you've ever like been to Chinatown or something, there's these Bagua mirrors that are hexagons and have the trigrams on them. So it's a different, layout, and pre-heaven could be looked at as before, in a sense, like before human will came into the picture. Like even I study and teach Japanese flower arranging, Ikebana. And there's also these this heaven, earth, and humanity element that is threaded through most Asian philosophy. And it's represented by this three, right? And even there's an arrangement, usually the arrangements have a heaven, earth, and humanity element, but there can be arrangements where there's just heaven and man, sorry, heaven and earth before man came into the picture, before free will came into the picture. So so there's this pre-heaven Bagua that looks at like before human will came into the picture.
Wow.
And it's called the pre-heaven Bagua. So they're associated, right? So it's kind of the will of heaven, but this is a post-heaven Bagua when we can bring in our free will as human. We can bring in that human element. So there's different ways to look at the Bagua. Like it's associated with the Loshu magic square. I don't know if you've heard of the Loshu magic square.
I think I've heard of it through you.
Yeah. So the Loshu magic square has, like, for instance, like there's numbers. So it's like, so there's different way. There's lots of different layers. So this is 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, and 2. So, and then they line up with the guas. And then if you add all these up, they always add up to 10, like horizontally. I think also diagonal, no, not diagonal, 10, right? Is that right? 8, 8, 9, what is, I think it's diagonally. I forgot. There's some way that they all add up.
Okay. Yeah.
It's called the Loshu magic square.
Yeah.
And also there's like the Vedic square also is an expanded version of it where it's like, because it's a 9x9 grid. So like I used to study yantras and drawing yantras, and that uses the Vedic square, which is a 9x9 grid that it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, there's different ways to look at it. So that's one layer of why it's laid out this way. Another, a real like kind of simple way of looking at it is that this is also exhibits another concept in feng shui called the commanding position. So if we enter, so in BTB feng shui, we always look at how do you enter a space. Like, how does qi, how does the energy flow into a space? And that's how we lay the bagua. So that's why I say align with the entry wall of your space. So what's close, what's more in, further back is more in command. So naturally, the guas or the areas that relate to your visibility, your fame, your relationships, your wealth and abundance are the most important. And they're all the way further back. And they're the safest in the space. And the more forward areas are like your career, helpful people, your spirituality. So that, or your knowledge and your skillfulness, those are more in the forefront. And there's also different ways that these, they also relate to different seasons, right? So there's spring and autumn on this side and summer and winter here. So it goes into that. It goes into that order. There's
into
also
that cycle. So the circle is there too. Yeah.
Yes, it's a wheel. So it also, if you look at the zodiac wheel too, which is the same as the Western zodiac wheel, it's just that it's staggered by, you know, half a month. So like the zodiac, the Chinese zodiac not only has, it's a 12-year cycle, but it's also a monthly cycle as well. And so they overlay with the same, like the same, it's the same like kind of 12 Western zodiac signs as well, except they're staggered, right? So it's in, it's like a month and a half a month, right? It's staggered. So these also overlay on this as well. So like rat is here at the, which is also related to 11 a.m. sorry, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. So it's like a clock. And up here, this is 11. This is like basically down here is midnight and up here is
wow.
Noon.
And
there's like so many nuances. So like, so that's very
right, like night and
there.
Day, midnight,
yes.
Right? Like the, you know, the
right.
Seasons, everything. That was really helpful, Angie, right? Just to, cause it's like, you know, you could ease just like, well, what's this seems like so, well, who chose alignment in that bottom corner, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, also though, it also relates to the I Ching and also our, my teachers would say also some things are things that you can't explain. So
yeah.
We have this obsession,
mystery.
Right? Yeah. We have the Western obsession is that you must dissect it, kill. We talked about this last year, right?
Yeah.
Dissect it, kill it, and then chop it up and see what, how it works. And so all, there's also the nuance of sometimes you don't have to know how it works and unpack it and see what,
And
like what.
Do you resonate with it? Do you gravitate towards it? Is your heart saying something? Do you feel it? Is there, I love what you're saying, Angie. It's so important. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've felt, less than because I didn't have the capability to analyze something or have like the mathematical answer for something or this, but I just have a feeling, I have an intuition. It feels right. It feels right to flow with this, to use it. So, wow. But that was really great to see. And it was helpful for you to have the like writing, marking it up.
There's a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
Like winter is water is black. And it's the color black. Like when you look at water, it is black usually. Red is on top, which is this, which is the south direction, which is summer, which is related to the horse. It's the color red. It's the most visibility. So there's a lot of reasons why, and it's laid out that way. But also there is a, you know, mystical reason too. So the story goes that a tortoise, the Lo Shi magic square arose from. On it was etched on a tortoise shell that that came out of a river. So and that became the basis of the Lo Shi magic square.
Wow. And so there's so much, so many layers probably to that myth, esoteric layers to unpack. Beautiful. Angie, tell us more about what you're up to with, you know, with the, you know, it could be the Feng Shui Design School, but also in particular, like with the design projects that you're working on, how is this supporting, how does Feng Shui support your clients to create really the life of their dreams or the life that they seek and desire. Yeah.
Well, I am actually starting to phase out a lot of my design work. Like I said, I'm only starting to work with one or two people a year. And I think if someone's watching this that actually does work in the design industry, you acknowledge that maybe 0.1% of your work is design. And the rest of it is project management and holding your client's hand, right? And the logistical stuff, like getting permits and pushing things through. And so I also work in New York City. So I'm an architect in New York City, and we mostly work on remodels because there's not in Manhattan.
There's so much built already. Yeah.
Right. There's no new construction. So so the way that I work, I bring in feng shui into my design work is to do my best to arrange things if the client is asking for it, because one important thing is that it needs to be asked for. So I will naturally maybe design things as much as I can to feng shui parameters, but there's many limitations. Like, you can't move the stove, you can't move the windows, you can't move the front door.
The plumbing, completely restructure the plumbing.
You can't move the plumbing. Because it goes, because these are all apartment buildings.
They're all apartments. They're all stacked. Yeah.
Yes. And you can't move wet areas over dry areas. So you literally can't. And then there's codes. You can't switch things around. So you actually can't do very much feng shui. But you know, for a feng shui practitioner, a lot of what you do is mostly remedial. So you can do more decorative things, which a lot of my students do. I tend to give more like magic type esoteric adjustments and placement adjustments. But a lot of my students are like decorators and designers, and they love color. Like, as you can tell, I'm not much of a color person. So I'm like black and white.
But, yeah, I love fresh, but then that really highlights your crystals and all of the objects in your plants.
That's more my style, but there's room for, you know, many different styles in feng shui. So a lot of my students who love color, they may use color as their primary way of working with feng shui with a client. So there's many different ways to incorporate it, but like with my design clients, it's mostly like trying to support them. Like, I think you, like how you phrased it, like how to kind of approach things as a good person. Like, when you're dealing with anxiety of not knowing what's happening,
right? Relations. Yeah.
Right. How do you work with those kinds of upheavals that come during a renovation? Like, it's a, you're,
oh
and you're
my
basically,
God.
You're dismantling your body.
Yeah. It's like boiling point, like every other day during a renovation.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that when I started, I thought I would like to have it more integrated. And then the more that I got to understand the practice of feng shui, I understood that even just a small shift can make a big difference, but it's really about the whole lifestyle perspective that is important. Rather than like saying, oh, I made this amazing feng shui design decision for them, right? So it could be something totally invisible. It could also be just being present and supportive for your client. That's part of applying a feng shui lifestyle to everything that you do. And it's also one thing that we really teach our students a lot, especially as they become consultants they're training to become consultants, is the number one thing is like, you need to listen to your clients. And, as an architect, many people, especially contractors, would give me the feedback that like, they're like, work with Angie if you don't want like an ego, like a super big ego to work with, because there's a lot of, I mean, not just male, but a lot of architects that are, and it's fine if you're this way. If you're watching this and you're this way, that's fine. It's just that I'm not very ego driven. So, so it's like, you know, I want to create the home that the client wants, even though if I think a fixture is ugly, I'll tell them it's not my favorite for whatever reason. But if they want it in there, that's, yeah, yeah. it's It's their home. It's their decision. So I think also like taking that approach of listening to the client, whether it's you're helping a client as a feng shui practitioner or as a design professional, just like hearing your client and supporting them to create a home that they love and a space that supports them is really important. And that's what comes through in both my design practice and when I teach feng shui and work with people working with their feng shui.
I love it. So beautiful. Listening. It's those small adjustments. I mean, there could be more physical design related, but what I'm hearing is that there's this deeper current that's possible to open up to, that involves magic as well. And I love that, how that, what that means for practicing architecture. And when I hear the word practice now, I'm actually just thinking, oh yeah, design practice, the practice of architecture. This could be a meditative practice. I mean, Rachel Grachowski in our circle, she's a yoga teacher, and it's great to see how she's bringing the practice of yoga into her team, her architecture team. Right relations, mindfulness, you know, setting some intentions in the morning with her team, right? Listening to the client. And yeah, I love that the builders often referred, you know, potential clients to you. It's like, if you want someone who is not an egomaniac, right?
Right.
And of
Talk
course,
to
like what you mentioned, having an ego is not a bad thing, right? That's linked to what we were talking about previously, having free will. The ego is a part of that. And I'm not somebody that like, it's like, oh, we can never have an ego. I mean, I needed an ego to be, you know, to stand pretty firm in my, you know, commitment to have, you know, Moroccan tadellacked plaster in my bathroom and in the center of our house, because it's not typical construction, right? You know, there's a kind of heart-centered warrior element that we need to be the pioneers, right? Of healing architecture and really change the way we build. But what you're talking about also is weaving in this compassion. I think of Kuan Yin, her energy, right? The compassion. She's right. She's with the water, the dragon, and her heart is just.
Yeah, and listening, that's so important.
Listening is a part of that. Yeah, flowing, listening, and the subtle, right? The subtleties.
Yeah, and ego is some clients do want someone to tell them what to do.
Absolutely.
That's also too. Listening to what your client wants. So listening, am I the one that can give them what they want, or is someone else better for them? But I think that that's key, is just listening to the client. And that's also like, when you talk about Kuan Yin, that's part of her story, that she hears the cries of the world.
She's just such a beautiful energy, such a beautiful energy. What I also appreciate too, Angie, is that you are cherry picking, hand picking, you know, the design clients that you are wanting to work with, and you know, you are focused on education as well, and it's a similar path for me too. I honestly did not picture, like, I did not have in the plans, according to my ego, that I would be teaching women architects and designers. I wanted to run away from architects and not have anything to do with them. And I, you know, I even wanted to be the star of the star of the magazines and the show, like where I'm like, I'm designing the best architecture, and I'm only working on projects with clients. And why am I going to teach other architects? Angie, when I opened up to the mystery and surrendered and really listened, it was like, no, you're a mentor, you're a teacher, and it's you're going to make more of an impact by sharing your spiritual gifts and your creativity and your learnings with other women architects and designers. And now I'm in my joy doing it. And like you, I handpick. I have an application to work with me if you're, you know, a property owner or a land steward, which is so not typical for architects, right? Like you need to have, you know, apply to work with me. But I've found that that's really helped me to stay like very clear. Am I saying yes to this person mm-hmm. or am I saying no? So, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's a really, I mean, obviously, like you have to work up to that. So because in the beginning, if you're mentoring people, and I am to my students, like it takes a decade to be an overnight success. It takes a lot of time to get to that point, but you start to learn. And even when you cherry pick clients too, sometimes you make mistakes. So you learn, like, that's not
they're all mirrors, right? And teachers,
right.
All mirrors and teachers. Yeah.
I love it. So, and it's interesting to see how things turn out. But I think that the key is, I think a lot of us like that, we're here because we understand there's something more to our spaces. And there's the beauty aspect, which is generally, if you're in this business, you're generally good at that part already. So that's the easy part. But then working with other people, how do you connect? How do you become a good consultant? How can you offer compassion to your clients? How can you listen to what they need? How can you
whole other layer?
Yeah. And if you create a home that's really harmful, like that's on you too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, I just think, yeah, these deeper currents of feng shui that you're bringing forth are tools, right? That will help one to come to their center, come to a place of maybe even being humble, meditating, opening up to the wonder, right? Wonders of nature, wonders of this world, the mystery. And congratulations on publishing this book and doing all the amazing work you do.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. I'm just tuning in if there's any last questions or anything else that wants to stream through in this conversation today. What do you think that feng shui has the power to do for the future of our homes and communities? These days we, things are moving so fast, Angie, technology, mm-hmm. Advancements in medicine, technology, quantum physics. I mean, things are going so, so, so fast. And there can be a part of us that is kind of moving this fast into the future that thinks like, well, what are we going to do with all this ancient wisdom? Isn't it outdated?
Mm-hmm.
What can feng shui provide for the future and the future of our spaces?
Yeah, well, I think that we can trust that if something isn't helpful, what naturally happens is that it'll dissolve, right? So, I think that we can trust that if it's not helpful, it will not last. So something about feng shui has been around for thousands of years, but with most modalities, things need to evolve, just like people need to evolve. Philosophies need to evolve and countries will evolve and change. Our bodies evolve and change, our faces, our hair, our gray hair.
Oh yeah, our whole body is going to change in some gazillion years from now. Yeah.
Yeah. So trust that if you're longing to connect to something that's important to you. And I think that feng shui has offered so many deep teachings that one, it's helped me reconnect to my Asian heritage, but two, it's also brought me to Buddhism. And now I'm a Buddhist practitioner and I really interweave many of the Buddhist teachings into feng shui because the feng shui that I practice already has a lot of roots in Tibetan Buddhism. But I really kind of bring all the, I try to really bring those concepts together because I don't see them as separate. And so from a Buddhist point of view and from a feng shui point of view, I think that what feng shui can really teach us in this, in our modern time is one, to slow down. There's so many messages that the phenomenal world wishes to teach us and share with us, but we're just, we just move too fast. We're missing them all. It can be as simple as a squeaky door, or it could be as extreme as you walk by something every day and you've never looked up and noticed it. So, you know, it reminds me of when I was in architecture school, actually, someone did, you know, I went to Berkeley, so we, there was a lot of not so architectural things that we did, but one of them was like someone did this like project where we had to highlight this toxic alleyway. So anyways, their design was to put these banners on this alleyway really high up. So basically you could walk through this alleyway every day and never look up and see all these like statistics about, you know, toxins that we have in our environment. But that's the same thing that we are just speeding through looking at our phones or in our heads and miss so many messages. It could be a smile from our child, or it could be a call for help from a friend, or it could, so that's an important teaching that I think feng shui offers. It asks us to look at our environment in a deeper way. And then the other important thing I think that is very important now, especially in the US, because there's so much division and duality that's
The
happening.
elections. Oh,
Yeah,
and more.
so there's the concept of yin and yang, which on the surface looks like it's about duality, but really it's non-duality. It's the investigation that there is, it's a non-binary system, but there is a binary system within the, it's a binary system within a non-binary system.
Right. The
But
greater
really,
of it is the non-binary.
yeah. And so what that eventually leads to is compassion, which is really important because, you know, on a very superficial level, someone might say, oh, people will ask me, oh, what do I do about my neighbor? My neighbor bothers me so much. And it's like, you know, it's again creating like, this is me and that's them. I'm right, they're wrong. Right. And so again, creating this further separation, but Buddhist concepts and feng shui concepts look at like, how are we instead interconnected and interdependent, that you are not separate from your chair that you're sitting on? You're not separate from the room that you're in. You're not separate from the air that you breathe. You're not separate from your neighbor. That we are really interconnected and interdependent. And this is the world that we've inherited. So how do we begin to embrace that and have true compassion? Because, you know, a lot of people come to feng shui maybe for very superficial reasons. They're like, okay, for some reason I want to make my home look nice, and this is interesting me. And so then they can acknowledge, okay, maybe if I make a change in my home, if it's easier to walk in my door, or if I have a home that like I can walk through with ease and I'm not like, you know, tripping over things or depressed or whatever, then that affects me and my mood and affects my family. And then it affects how I affect everyone else. So when you start to see that the things around you are affected by your energy, then you can start to make the jump to, oh, the people around me are affected by me. And they if I affect them and they affect me. Countries affect each other, neighbors, you know, so it
And it
really
just
like,
grows and grows that
right.
connection from you, from the beginning, that is you, the center, or however you want to look at
Yeah.
it.
So my hope and my aspiration in teaching and sharing feng shui, and also in, you know, in writing this book, because it's very accessible. It's, you know, people can purchase it. It's very accessible and it's very entry level book. It's like the very 101 basics. It's really that people start to connect to those two concepts, that the two concepts that they can slow down and pay attention to the details of their lives, and two, to start to realize they are interconnected and interdependent with the world around them.
So beautiful, Angie. And imagine then what kind of worlds we can create.
Yes.
When everyone is aware and conscious of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Including beauty, including beauty being a manifestation of that.
It's all
Yeah.
included. Yeah,
It's
all
all
of that's
included.
included. Yeah. Yeah, so that's how I think feng shui and Buddhism, which to me are again intertwined, that are what that I teach them woven together, really can help the world. And you know, people will see, you know, hope even just a little subtle shift, I think, can be a seed to maybe grow a lot more compassion and connection and change in the world.
So beautiful, Angie. Wow. I'm touched. I'm moved. It's beautiful. Everyone, make sure you purchase this book. I'm really looking forward to reading it and pulling from its wisdom and the tips, especially as I'm still in the process of completing our house with my family. I mean, we got the garden too. Oh my God, there's so much to do. But what I'm going to do is slow down and really listen. I mean, I know the energies of homes, and I teach this as well, but Angie, it's a whole different thing also when we're doing it, the work on ourselves. So there's always an opportunity to learn. And I thank you for this book. And everyone, make sure you scroll down and you check out Angie's links. Share also, Angie, what else are you up to in the Mindful Design Feng Shui School, or if there are any other exciting events or offers, courses that you want to share with our community.
Well, we have a podcast. It's called the Holistic Spaces Podcast, so we can link that. And then our certification course starts in February, so we're open. Yeah, we're open for enrollment now. And then that's just if you're interested in feng shui, you can tune into our podcast. That's where most people follow us. So, and
nice.
The Holistic Spaces Podcast.
Fantastic. Great. So the links will be below. Everyone, make sure you check them out. And buy the book. I'm excited to read it. Angie, thank you so much. And it was really an honor and blessing, like always, to have you in the circle. Thanks so much for this conversation.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Everyone, make sure you check out tune into all the other interviews. So delighted that you all joined the Sacred Blueprint for our New Earth interview series. Until the next interview, bye. See ya. Bye, Angie. Have a great rest of the day.
You too.
Thank you for tuning into the New Earth Architectress. It is my intention to inspire more women architects to come out of hiding and unleash their intuitive powers to build a prospering architecture practice aligned with their divine calling. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe, leave a 5-star review on iTunes, and share this episode with other women architects you know are feeling the nudges to bridge spirit with form. You can find out more about me and the Sacred Blueprint Movement by visiting AishaRoseMelodyHassan.com. Until next time.